chicks dig the zombie takeout.
This is why Ira Glass works alone. Welcome to episode 286 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I am Scotto.
And unfortunately, we don't have any listeners submitted or news this week, which means we have to go straight to this week's movie.
I think we've got enough on our plate as it is.
Well, and actually, this is the fun part where we get to rip it to shreds. And it is from 1997, Batman and Robin. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Rubber Nipples. Would you like to take a look at some fine rubber nipples? You look like someone who could really use some rubber nipples. We really just want to sell you some rubber nipples.
Have any walrus protectors?
Could use them.
Also brought to you by satellites. Now with heating and cooling units.
And apparently handles, so you can hold on to them really well. Oh, that's the telescope, I'm sorry.
Satellites. Anyway, so we begin in the Batcave. There's no backstory as to how Robin came into his life.
Well, because, right, he wasn't in the second one, was he?
No. He has Robin.
Because I've seen the second one, and I kind of liked it. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Hold the phone. This is the fourth one.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking of the third. I'm thinking of the Val Kilmer one, because the Burton ones were
Val
good.
Val Kilmer was third.
Yeah, it was okay.
And Keaton had two.
Yeah, the Kilmer one was okay.
Ah, I wasn't that big a fan of it.
It wasn't great, but it was okay.
Put next to this, though. Yeah. Well, you'll see. So, he's now working with someone, but he's, of course, having issues of trust with him because, well, Robin's just a kid and he kind of just goes off kind of cocked and just does whatever he wants.
He's kind of a dick. Literally.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Every time he used his name, it felt like an insult.
Right. I don't know. Anyway.
I think Clooney was deliberately saying it that way.
I think so, too. So they wind up in the middle of this heist with Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, they get called into it. And the law enforcement professional grown man contacts Batman and tells him, there's a new villain in town.
Yeah.
Using those direct words.
And if I'm not mistaken, Freeze was one of those villains created for the 60s TV show, wasn't he?
Yeah. So Freeze steals this giant diamond. They go chase after him. And he winds up getting away with the diamond because of Robin, of course. And although Robin manages to save Batman's life in this... You know, this is our first Batman movie that we've ever done, by the way.
That's sad.
Isn't it?
Because we've talked on a number of occasions about how we're both big Batman fans. And
well, yeah.
This is the first one we do.
This was just like the last kick to the balls before it needed to be put on a shelf.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then there's also this other story going on about this science assistant who they'd had their funding cut because the scientist himself was a bit of a lunatic who created a weaponized human. And, so I guess an ideological disagreement. And the mad scientist, by the way, was probably my favorite actor.
Well, yeah, John Glover. Real shame he was in this. I have a quote from him later.
In the whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
If they just had some more of him, there might have been some hope to this.
And this is the first time they fucked up Bane.
But he had two good scenes in it, and that were very brief, because, of course, he gets, spoiler alert, he gets killed
right
very early. He's one of the few people who actually get killed in this movie, actually
gave me a little respect back for Glover, because, it was such a small role, and he did die.
And so she becomes Poison Ivy, which apparently means dressing up like a drag queen and imitating Mae West. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to eat. And this plot summary is just going to go on forever, because really that's the crux of this film, is they just kept throwing stuff at us that was just uninteresting and just, oh, and then they chase them here right, for this, exactly. And then they chase them there for that, and, but she has a trap set up for them, and mm-hmm. you know, you can't kiss a girl. And
in the past, I've referenced the title of my favorite Trailer Clash episode, actually my favorite title of a Trailer Clash episode, William Neeson Gotta Eat. You could call this episode Everybody Involved with This Movie Gotta Eat.
We had an episode, I try to remember, it was like one of those sea creature movies where we just called it Paychecks All Around.
Yeah.
That is very apt for this. But the difference is, it's the script.
Yeah.
So let me try to sum this abortion of a plot up. Because how do you trace this? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So yes, they go back and forth. They lock up Freeze. They bust Freeze out. Freeze has a wife. He wants to save from a disease, so he froze her, and then the idiot froze himself. Which, I mean, clumsiness. I mean, that's how he becomes a villain. And that, I don't, still don't know how that made him a villain, because you'd think Batman would want to fund,
yeah.
You know, his program to cure the disease in the right. first place. And then once he finds out about it, he doesn't exactly do that, despite still being in the most insecure asylum in the world,
Arkham. And it's supposed to be Arkham. Oh, yeah, Arkham. I get the joke, but Arkham on paper is supposed to be very secure, and they don't even try it in the movie.
Oh, that's as bad a joke as saying that Stormtroopers are precise and accurate.
They say it's secure, is my point. On paper, it's supposed to be secure. It isn't, actually, which is the joke. But
that's an asylum that has a revolving door on the front.
But they actually show the revolving door in this movie, practically, which is kind of, you know, unusual.
Or what the kids from CBA in Jersey called the asylum next to their, the high school. Yeah, Marlboro Fence Jumping Club, because it was just that fucking easy to get out.
Right.
Are you the Joker? No, I'm just somebody visiting. Okay, you can go. But anyway, enough, because this plot summary is bad as it is without going on a rant. But it's hard to not rant when you talk about this movie after having to sit through the whole fucking thing. So yeah, pretty much in the end, nobody dies. And,
except for John Glover.
Except for, like, yeah, maybe a few, you know,
red shirts.
Shemps, yeah. You know, a few red shirts got frozen and they get unfrozen. Because, of course, you have a whopping 11 minutes to be frozen solid before dying.
Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Freeze explains this just when there is a convenient pool nearby to thaw Robin.
Oh, of course. Anyway, everybody lives.
Yeah.
Hilarity does not ensue, intentionally at least, in no shape or form.
Now, this was fast-tracked because of the success of Batman Forever, the third movie, as we've now established. And Warner Brothers brought in toy companies to be involved with pre-production, including the design of concept art and character illustrations. Schumacher has criticized Warner Brothers' strategy for the movie as being overly toyetic.
Well, wait a minute. He was the director of the film.
But the studio outranks him.
Yeah, but he could have easily walked.
Well, yeah, he could have, but it's a paycheck. And
it's Joel Schumacher. His reputation took such a hit from doing this movie that I guarantee you he lost a lot of money from it in the end.
And John Glover, who played Dr. Jason Woodrow, the red shirt who dies midway through, said that Schumacher would sit on a crane with a megaphone and yell before each take, "Remember, everyone, this is a cartoon." He said it was hard to act because that kind of set the tone for the film.
You know, that doesn't surprise me in the least. You have the cartoon sound effects are used throughout. Mm-hmm. Like when there's a fight scene, there's that I'm trying to remember that squealing sound effect when somebody is like slipping in a cartoon.
Yeah.
you know, when they're trying to run but their feet are sliding, that you have that little squeal. I wish I could remember what they used to actually do it. It might have even just been a slide whistle.
Right, notes. Probably. And there was a Wilhelm about halfway through.
I thought there were a bunch of Wilhelms.
I only noticed one when Freeze was throwing a guard at the museum when they're having the auction. The Wilhelm is too good for this movie.
No highfalutin Wilhelms for this.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain movies that should be amended into the Geneva Convention.
Oh, seriously. Yeah, this should not even be shown in Guantanamo Bay. This is crossing a line.
Yeah. And at the beginning.
Set the tone. Yeah, the beginning.
The first thing you see after the credits, which were interesting because there was no teaser. I'm so used to teasers on movies, you know, where there's a short scene before the credits. Not this time. And that was normal for the time. But as soon as the credits are done, you have close-ups of Clooney and O'Donnell putting on the bat suits.
Including a well-centered shot of his ass.
Yeah, I think both of theirs, or one of theirs, I don't know. And close-ups on their chests so you could see the nipples on the costumes.
Right, and it was very confusing to start out that way because, not the ass, of course, is just unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah.
But the whole, like...
And they did it to Alicia Silverstone later.
Yeah, they did. But the putting on the outfit thing was kind of weird because this is the fourth film.
Yeah, yeah.
We've seen better versions of the outfits, even. Well,
yeah, because they just went pure wetsuit on this one.
Right.
I mean, I'm tempted to make an S&M joke, but they weren't even leather. They were just rubber.
Right, right. So they were horrible outfits, and they were making this big deal, like, we're putting on this, you know, the outfit. Like, but we've already seen different versions of the outfit from three other films.
Right.
It was just the setting, the tone that we're not going to do anything new here.
Right, exactly.
You've seen this before, and now you're going to see it again.
And then we meet Freeze, and he starts making what will turn out to be, and I looked this up, 27 ice puns throughout the movie.
IMDb counts puns and any, you know.
Well, I'm just talking about specifically the ice puns for 27. How many and did they say?
It comes to 40.
Okay.
It's a 2-hour movie. So it is.
One almost every minute.
So let's see, 124 minutes with 40. So
124 minutes. So one every 2 or 3 minutes. Sorry.
Yes. Yes. And then the credits. So yes, like one every 3 minutes easily.
Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where, you know, Batman shows up and he's going to confront Freeze, and Robin comes in as this perfectly timed distraction. And he's sliding toward Freeze on a bike, or kind of, you know, hanging onto the bike while it's sliding.
Yeah.
And Freeze doesn't shoot him. He just sits there and watches him, sliding toward him. He's got the gun in his hand, the Freeze gun.
Just shoot him. Just
doesn't
just
do a thing. Yeah, exactly. It's a Scott Evil moment.
Yeah. You know what? Of course, the infamous line of this from this movie is when, you know, Schwarzenegger just says, chill.
Yeah, of course.
When I saw this in the theater in 97, I was really drunk. It was like a midnight showing and we were just like, hey, let's just go see it, you know, kind of thing.
This would be a good midnight movie.
And I did not remember that he repeats chill like 3 times in that scene.
And you noticed it this time, even though you were once again intoxicated.
I wasn't nearly as drunk as I was back then. that was something different. I mean, that was, it was Montreal. We'd had like
a
pitcher of like something each, I think.
Wow.
And there was a bunch of us there, and I started mistying the thing. Some people gave me dirty looks, and I just sit back. Oh, come on. You can't think this is good. Right.
Much like I did with Independence Day.
And then the projector broke and the crowd started applauding the broken projector.
Nice.
I don't think we made it to the end back then.
Uh-huh.
I think we said, hey, let's just get out of here after a while.
If I wasn't watching it for the show, I would have checked out in that opening fight with Freeze.
Same here.
At one point, they showed that there were ice skates in the bat boots. You know, they kind of kick their heels and ice skates descend. Like Heelys, but worse.
I didn't even have a problem with that compared to everything else.
But it's just the first sign of, oh, it's that movie. Because this is the first time I've seen most of it. I'd seen clips before. I knew its reputation, but I hadn't seen the entire horror until now.
I don't know if I saw the third one in the theater. I can't remember.
See, that's the one I saw in the theater. I think the only one I saw in the theater.
I probably did. This is like this and the original Indiana Jones, you know, trilogy are like the only movies, I mean, all in the theater as they came out.
And then they sky surf. You know, they chase Freeze to this rocket. He takes off. I don't know what his plan was to land, but you know, he gets out.
Thing back then, because like wasn't this around the same time as Tarzan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where he's like, you know, tree surfing.
Uh-huh.
Everybody had to surf,
and so Freeze gets out of the rocket, and they're stuck in it with a couple of bombs. They take down the doors, and they sky surf down from the rocket with an explosion behind them. So yeah, the physics I don't even want to think about.
You'd still stay on the board somehow, I'm sure.
And so they catch up with Freeze. Yeah. Ouch. My brain. This really should have killed the careers of everyone involved.
It really should have. But the real true guilty party is without a doubt whoever wrote this.
Well, that was Schumacher and someone else whose name I can't remember. They had to write it quickly.
Schumacher does not have a writing credit. Somebody named Akiva Goldsmith.
Yeah, that's who it is. He and Schumacher co-wrote it, according to Wikipedia, anyway.
Who has written episodes for Fringe.
Okay. I think it really is Warner Brothers, then. Because, I mean, they brought in toy companies for the designs. And at one point, Poison Ivy talks
of... Producer on Fringe, never mind.
Oh, okay. Because, I mean...
I've heard episodes, too.
At one point, Poison Ivy talks about her action figure. They talk about... The merchandising in the fucking movie. It was like Spaceballs, but serious.
Let's see. He wrote the screenplay for The Client. That was his first one. And then he did Batman Forever.
Mm-hmm.
He did like the Grisham movies.
So Robot, you do the art film, and then you do the commercial film, and then you do the art film, and then you do the commercial film.
I Am Legend wrote 12 episodes of Fringe. He's writing the Dark Tower screenplay. I don't know. I've never read those series. I wonder if that's good.
I read the first one. I liked it. I've been meaning to get back to them, but then I heard about the series, so I'm going to wait for it.
And he's writing the next two Transformer movies.
So he's really at both ends of the spectrum.
He's actually writing two Transformer movies. There's Transformer 7 and 8, and which they haven't even announced the year 8 is coming out. 7's coming out in 19. And there's going to be a Transformers spinoff. That he's also writing.
Okay. Now, has he written the previous ones?
No.
Okay, so this is new. So I can't really blame him for the old ones.
It's very weird.
But if he's responsible for this, and he's going to be working with Bay, that doesn't bode well.
He's also the guy behind the screenplays for the Da Vinci Code books, movies.
I wasn't crazy about the book or the movie. But anyway, back to Batman.
But that's just the thing, though. It's this writer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the script.
Well, it's the script. It's the, as I put it in one of my perspective titles, Neon and Glitter, the movie. It's you know, the design. It's the script. It's the pathetic performances in most cases because they didn't care.
Right.
It's every word out of Uma Thurman's mouth was painful. And she's a decent actor.
Oh, she just, you could tell she didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell she was collecting a paycheck.
Right, right.
I have these words to say and I'm going to say them. And I'll just do a little Mae West just uh-huh. to, you know, because it's something to do.
Right, right.
But, I mean, like, Schwarzenegger takes a lot of heat for this because, of course, he's pretty much the lead.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at first I thought his name was first just because, you know, $25 million and he's the big star in this. But no, Freeze has... probably the most screen time in the whole movie.
Probably. But that was the case with the old Batman and Robin series, with the 60s show. The villains were really the showpiece. And this actually was supposed to be, Schumacher wanted this to be a homage to both the 60s series and the work of Dick Sprang, who was
I love that you say homage.
It's, might as well keep the joke going. especially since we don't explain it anymore.
No.
The work of Dick Sprang, who was a writer, actually, no, an artist on Batman in the 40s and 50s, I think. He was best known for redesigning the Batmobile. I think he was the one who turned it into a sports car because it was like a Rolls at first. But there were some good things about the movie, believe it or not. As you mentioned, the brief appearance of John Glover, he was great for his couple of...
I thought he was Gary Cole. I was like,
He was great for his couple of scenes. I think Clooney was okay as Batman, or it was Bruce Wayne, I should say.
Of course.
Horrible Batman, but he was okay as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, his Batman, just kind of like, huh, I'm here, yeah. I'm Batman, what are you going to want me to do?
The actor who played Alfred, I think he was in all four movies, he was great.
Yeah.
And I actually liked Batman's speech to Freeze at the end, when he captured him and he was trying to convince him to do, you know, to do good. That was good until the response completely ruined it, where he said, you know, take two of these and pulled out the cure for the disease, which he just happened to be carrying for some inexplicable reason.
And of course it glows. It has to glow.
But all of those were not enough to, I just keep going back to the phrase neon and glitter, to outweigh the neon and glitter that was this movie. And this was the same year as The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah.
Both were amusement park rides, as you called The Fifth Element a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It worked with The Fifth Element. It didn't work with this one.
Well, they had something going there. They really thought that script out. And
yeah, exactly. It comes down to the writing and directing. Luc Besson versus Schumacher and Aviva, whoever.
From that one British actor, I think everybody... And, of course, Bruce Willis does what Bruce Willis does.
Yeah.
But everybody else was a professional and took it seriously.
Right. Exactly. They actually wanted to make the movie. They had faith in it.
There were only two in the middle that, like, were kind of out of place there.
Mm-hmm.
But this, man, this was just brutal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so what I was starting to say with Schwarzenegger, would it have made a difference if there was a better actor in the free suit, you know? I mean,
I don't think so.
Like the line I wanted to use to start was, if revenge is a dish best served cold, then put on your Sunday finest, because we're gonna feast tonight. Because tonight we feast.
Yeah.
I mean, think, who writes a line like that?
Well, it's talking about sense. Food, and, you know, revenge as food and then feasting. It kind of vaguely connects, but yeah, I get your point.
It's a word salad, man. I mean, if you had Anthony Hopkins in the suit,
who I think was up for the role.
No, you're kidding, right?
No, Hopkins was considered for a role in the film. I don't remember if it was Freeze or Alfred. It could have been Alfred.
Wow.
Yeah, but he was considered for a role.
Yeah, Freeze wouldn't have been bad, actually. But you know what? It doesn't matter, because I mean, you're wearing the suit. Whoever is in the suit is just going to say these lines anyway.
Right.
And there's no putting a spin on these lines. I mean, and you do like what the Harrison Ford did to Lucas, you know, and saying, you know, would he really say that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
But would you'd have to go through the entire script here.
Yeah.
Like, what about that line? Why would he say that?
And there were just other things that didn't make sense. Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, shows up on a break from school, but she's wearing the uniform. Not that I minded seeing a young Alicia Silverstone in a school uniform.
Well, of course.
But it made no sense. Why would she be wearing the uniform on break?
It was the excuse to put her in the uniform.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was also a front that she'd actually been kicked out of the school.
Well, yeah, exactly. And when Poison Ivy changes, becomes Poison Ivy, she lists off exactly the effects that the plant toxins are having on her. How would she know this?
Well, that's the problem. There's no fucking subtext in this whole movie.
Yeah.
This made Ghost in the Shell look subtle.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this everything that happened, there was no mystery. Hey, you know, I wonder what happened to his wife. Cut to the camera. Mm-hmm. There she is.
Right.
There's no, like, mystery to let going, like, yeah, what the hell happened there?
And there's a subplot that they barely chased down that could have made for an interesting movie. Alfred is in search of his brother, who is a butler at a floating kingdom. So it can be anywhere. That could have been an interesting movie. I mean, the floating kingdom thing is a little absurd, but...
Yes.
But I mean, the search could have made for an interesting movie. It wouldn't have been a Batman movie. but it could have been interesting. Could have been a lot better than this. Also, Bane can barely speak. How the hell can he drive?
Drive.
And again, this is the first time they fucked up Bane, because Bane is supposed to be a fucking genius.
True.
You know, they kind of got that part. Actually, they got most of it right in Dark Knight Rises, was it? Except they messed up the voice and the accent and all that. Bane isn't supposed to be British. He's supposed to be from Santa Prista. But, you know, aside from that, they kind of nailed it with Dark Knight Rises. Well, I'm just nitpicking it.
I was going to say, isn't Batgirl Gordon's daughter?
Yes, Barbara Gordon. I think I called her Barbara Gordon a minute ago. And then, no, she's Barbara Pennyworth, because she's apparently Alfred's niece now. Yeah, no. And I think that's even in the comic. She's Barbara Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
Because it makes more sense, because Gordon is actually supposed to be a thing in a Batman movie.
Yeah.
Was Gordon even in this?
He was. He was that older cop with the mustache. Yeah. But yeah, terrible. Just terrible. And I think he was the Gordon in the other three also.
Okay. This is before year one, I guess, because that's when Gordon becomes kind of a badass.
You know, he's supposed to be in a suit, kind of, not in a blue uniform.
Right.
You know,
he's the police commissioner.
Yeah, he's the commissioner.
This is more cartoonish than a lot of cartoons I've seen, and I'm not talking about anime. I mean, actual American cartoons are less cartoonish than this.
The problem was, they were, and it was pretty clear right at the front, that they wanted to make, you know, the TV series movie, pretty much.
This is the movie version of the series, which is what I've said for a couple of weeks now.
Which
I thought going into that with that knowledge would make it more tolerable. It didn't.
Well, the problem is, if you're making a movie version of the TV series, you make a movie version of the TV series. Right. They were making a movie version of the TV series, only they were trying to do it in the form of a Tim Burton.
Right. Yeah, they were kind of still trying to keep a lot of the Tim Burton atmosphere.
Right. And it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're making a movie version of the TV series, it should not be over 2 hours long.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that was just inexcusable. It also needed a scene where they were climbing up a wall on a grappling hook and a window opens up and Phyllis Diller comes out.
Of course. But yeah, and this effort to just throw in three villains that it's like, did they just pick them out of a hat?
Yeah.
I mean, the plants wouldn't grow in the frozen in the frozen world.
Mm. I mean, at one point he pulls out a black bat card. I should say a bat black card, like a black credit card, you know, no limit, but with the bat logo on it.
And it's, you know, expiration forever.
Yeah, I didn't catch that part.
Yeah, but think about this. The plants would not grow in the frozen earth.
Right. So the partnership between Ivy and Freeze made no sense, yes.
No, it made no sense whatsoever.
And also, his love interest, Bruce Wayne's, was played by Elle Macpherson, who I thought we'd already learned that she couldn't act. I mean, she only has a few scenes, but they're kind of intolerable.
And she served no purpose whatsoever in this movie.
And it also suddenly became Mad Max at some point.
Oh, of course, yeah, where they're just, you know.
Barbara sneaks off to this bike race, and Dick follows her, Robin. And the bike race scene was like a scene from Mad Max, but neon. Like, it had the mohawks and the spikes and all of that, and it just made no sense in the middle of this amusement park ride.
I'd say the pod racing scene from the prequels had more dramatic tension to it.
Her bike gets sabotaged, and she ends up falling off the edge of this bridge with, you know, Robin behind her. He catches her, and the next scene you see, they're in the garage talking. Would have been interesting to see how they got off the bridge.
No, it wouldn't have been.
I don't know, could have added a little tension.
You know, it would have been more interesting if they had cut the whole scene out altogether and filmed it in the first place.
Of course. Would have been more interesting if they cut the entire movie, but then, you know, that's a different story.
You know, the whole, like, it, you know, they added Robin, and then they add her, too. I mean, just keep it to Robin. Mm-hmm. You know, like, keep it to him, you know, finding Robin and all that stuff. You could also say this movie was Oh, even more cartoony than the animated series.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. This is more cartoonish than anything DC has done, any animation. Because the DC animated universe is actually really good.
It's a half hour, you know, they were doing a half hour thing.
Right.
And you feel like they stretched a half hour into 2 hours. Because there's just a lot of, oh, he's there, let's chase him here. And no one's going to, like, get killed or anything.
Interspersed with these flashbacks that Bruce was having because Alfred is very ill, that just didn't play. They're supposed to be, you know, emotional scenes with Alfred taking care of a young Bruce. Just didn't work. They also set it up that Barbara is a computer genius, yet when she's trying to hack into Alfred's computer, she tries passwords like Alfred Wayne and England. How stupid does she think he is? Alfred, again, super genius. And they establish that he's a super genius because he put his personality into the AI in the Batcave that she interacts later.
My luggage.
You know, and they first turn him into Max Headroom.
Yes.
With a couple of the stutters, you know. Yes.
I think that was very intentional.
Of course.
They threw in, like, some nice little references. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, a gang dressed like, you know, the Droogs.
Right.
There
and
was
her monologue after that scene was just intolerable. It was the worst part of the movie.
That's the other thing. You just cut any monologue.
Particularly Poison Ivy. Speech.
Oh, my God.
I also forgot how annoying Alicia Silverstone was before watching this. When Kilmer either was fired or quit, depending on who you talk to, Schumacher wanted to cast William Baldwin as Batman, but Clooney ended up being cast instead.
My God, this would have been...
I haven't seen William Baldwin in enough to know what that would have been like.
This would have been The Room.
At least then it would have been enjoyable.
Could you imagine if they casted Wizzo as Batman?
Oh, okay. I just saw in my notes. Hopkins wasn't considered for Freeze. That probably was Alfred. Patrick Stewart was considered for Freeze.
There you go. But it still wouldn't have been.
Well, the role had to be rewritten after that, specifically for Schwarzenegger.
Well, I mean, it was just, I mean, let's get all the cold puns in there.
Mm.
Let's get all the cold references in there. Temperature. Something like, it's going to be a cold time in the town tonight. I mean, like, what the fuck? And there was nothing about in the town tonight or anything, like, where that reference actually worked there.
When the filming was over, Clooney quipped, "I think we just killed the franchise." And he's been known to refund people who saw it in the theaters. So if you ever meet George Clooney, ask him for a refund.
Oh, wow.
Now, possibly the saddest thing about this movie, this was the last version of Batman that was seen by Bob Crane, who created Batman.
Because he hung himself when he saw his writing credit on there.
He died a year after the film was made. It was also the last one that he worked as a project consultant on.
He went home and he did the noble thing and painted the ceiling after seeing this piece of shit.
And there were just a couple of other little minor points. The two scientists hanging onto the telescope for like 20 minutes, even though they had no actual, you know, physical training. They're scientists. How?
It was just to have them, like, comment on the action going on.
Yeah, and to, like, just add a bit of a danger.
Like, I mean, adding a "that's gotta hurt" kind of thing into it, which I think they used at one point in the movie, too.
Also, why didn't Barbara have a anatomically correct bat suit?
Yeah.
She just had cones, not nipples.
That doesn't make any sense.
Mm. And this is probably my favorite part. Actually, well, I said something else was my favorite part. I don't remember. But this is from a comedic standpoint. Gotham is frozen. I think it's actually thawing at this scene. And a cop gets out of a cop car. And you can see the icicles hanging off of the cop car flopping when he opens the door. It kind of summed the movie up nicely.
Now, one of the big things some people try to talk about it when they bring up this movie is the homoeroticism in it.
Mm.
But
that's always been the case, particularly in the 60s series. you know, they've, and whenever Robin's been around, there's been that kind of undercurrent.
Well, they act like there it was some sort of an undercurrent or subtlety to it. This movie has no subtlety.
Of course.
Not even the homoeroticism is subtle.
Right.
I mean, think about this. How many times can they say not to kiss the woman?
Right, right.
There's, of course, the leather, the outfits.
Oh, more rubber, but anyway, that's a thing, too.
Bruce Wayne, were those, like, two ripped dudes? Like, the statues of them holding, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The sides of his fireplace in his home?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would anybody do that?
Well, he wanted to pay homage to the 60s show, and the homoeroticism was very, very prevalent in the 60s show as a joke.
I think the only non-poisonous kiss in this movie was between Bruce and Alfred.
Probably.
Because, I mean, his, you know, actual girlfriend... They're just eating dinner, and she's literally just arm candy. Well, not literally.
Yeah.
She's figuratively arm candy.
Yeah, yeah. And then to explain, Bruce kisses Alfred on the cheek after hugging him because Alfred is dying. And Alfred's practically his father.
Yeah. I'm surprised you also didn't bring up the your biggest pet peeve.
Hmm? I ignored all the science in this.
But it's your biggest pet peeve.
Montage?
Science pet peeve.
Oh, okay. What's my biggest science pet peeve specifically? Crystals. What did I miss? Oh, crystals.
They even fucking worked crystals into this shit trifecta.
I was so beat down by the time the crystals became a thing that I just didn't give a shit.
I mean, it was a ball of
it
crystals.
Wasn't worth complaining about. It's like the science in general in this movie. It wasn't worth complaining about.
But think about it. That was the MacGuffin. That was his thing to
right. Yeah.
That he was going to unleash, you know, hell on everybody was a ball full of crystals.
Yeah.
And he had holes shaped perfectly for each crystal, even though he didn't know what crystal he was going to get to run it.
This movie is so bad, I overlooked fucking crystals. I think that says
fucking
a lot.
Fucking crystals.
On a sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
Due to Batman and Robin's poor critical reception, gee, I wonder why, Warner Brothers quietly canceled a sequel titled Batman Unchained, just to amp up the
eroticism.
Clooney vowed to never reprise the role. Schumacher had several meetings with Warner Brothers to get them to reconsider letting him do another Batman movie.
Why the fuck would Schumacher even want to do another Batman movie after this?
Schumacher wanted to take the film back to its darker roots and make a Batman Year One, starring Kurt Russell as a young Gordon, that would have had Selina Kyle as a young, beautiful African-American woman living in the ghetto, so Catwoman mixed with Year One. However, Warner Brothers decided not to rehire Schumacher, and the Batman film franchise remained in development limbo for years until Batman Begins, of course.
It's not even that big a limbo if you think about it. It was only 8 years.
That's true, yeah. That's really just a nice, comfortable break.
Yes, it was a breather that was badly needed.
Mm-hmm, yeah, just to get the taste out of our mouths.
Superman could really use a breather, and Spider-Man as well.
And I remember when the Burton movie came out. This was before X-Men, before the MCU.
Holy fuck.
That and we were so happy to have a legitimately good superhero movie.
Okay, I'm going to sound old here, but the kids just don't understand what life was like before the Burton movie.
Yeah.
Batman sucked. All it was the show.
And actually, what I always think back to with, you know, Mara's, you know, live-action superhero stuff before Batman is the old 70s Spider-Man series.
Ooh.
That was like the best we had in terms of live action. I actually found it on YouTube. It's not horrible.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't hold up well, but it's better than I remember. So when that first Batman movie came out, even though it was kind of cheesy and, you know, doesn't really hold up now.
Hey, it does the job. I've seen it recently. I mean... But considering it was, like, I mean, come on, they fucking landed on the moon with it, you know? It was, right, right. It was pretty much the equivalent of that.
Yeah, effectively.
Stuff they used to land on the moon was shit.
Compared to the space shuttle, yeah, exactly.
You carry around in your, you know, cell phone, computers, way more advanced than what they landed on the moon with.
But it did the job. Very good analogy. Yeah.
It did the job.
And we loved it at the time because we had a decent superhero movie. And, you know, they've gotten better. I mean, I have my issues with the MCU and with
the Joker. Come on. I mean,
which I have some issues with as well.
No.
Well, comparing it to, you know, the classic Joker, he didn't really fit the role. I'm comparing it to like Mark Hamill's animated version, which is really the Joker.
Which wouldn't have happened if it wasn't.
Exactly. Very true. Very true.
But no, what was great about Nicholson as the Joker was that it wasn't just, oh, I'm this funny clown. It was, no, I'm a fucking psycho.
Fair enough. Yeah, he did know that part.
That's all he needed to be.
But my point is, you know, that Burton movie was a landmark. And it devolved into this. Just three movies. Four movies.
Well, because the flip side of that is the second one that came out.
Yeah, true. Wasn't nearly as good.
Right. And that, it was 3 years. And I think maybe even told this story on this podcast before this. But, I mean, we were just... It felt like an eternity waiting between those three, you know, those two movies.
And I think it was three before Forever as well.
Yeah. Like I said, these kids that have like a comic book movie every year, season at least now.
Well, there is more than one a year. I've looked at the MCU dates.
Right. Between DC.
And then if you throw DC in, they're occasional movies.
You've got like at least three, maybe four a year, I'm thinking.
I don't think it's quite that much because DC doesn't do a lot of movies. They don't have
a steady
stream. But I know the MCU does more than one a year. And you've got the X-Men movies and Spider-Man movies.
So we're talking 2 to 3 a year plus live-action TV shows going on.
Yeah.
Like a few of them. And more than a few.
Oh, yeah. Quite a few live-action TV. That's where DC shines.
And so, back then, this was it. We waited 3 years for that other movie, and it fell victim to the same thing that this one did, where they were just trying to throw too many villains in there. Mm-hmm. It became like a weird villain stew. You just go up against the Penguin,
right?
You know, just go up against Catwoman.
And was it Raimi who made the same mistake with the third Spider-Man movie many years later?
I gave up.
I don't remember if Raimi directed that one. I liked the first one. Actually, I liked the first two.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That third Spider-Man movie was kind of where I started to kind of fade on superhero movies. Because,
I skipped that last one.
Good idea.
I think
On the break.
For this one, just do Poison Ivy or Freeze. You don't need both. Or if you do have it in there,
focus on Bane.
Yeah, just have it as a side character that does like a scene or two and then out. But the main focus should be on one villain.
Right, exactly.
That's what the success of the first one was. It was the Batman.
Exactly. It was the Joker origin story.
And that was it. That's all you needed.
Yeah.
So on to Brains.
Like I said, there are a few minor bright spots, particularly the actor who played Alfred. But
underused, though, too.
Exactly. And of course, John Glover. But that doesn't... Oh, and I forgot to mention this in the review proper. That scene where Bane is created really had kind of a Rocky feel to it. Rocky Horror.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Which made me smile a little bit. But that doesn't counter all of the other shit that is in this. I'm going zero.
I almost would have given it a half a brain just for using the Smashing Pumpkins ripping off Watcher of the Skies, but they of course didn't even have it in the movie that you could discern anywhere at least. And they just tacked it on the credits.
Is that the one that was in the Watchmen trailer? I know they've done two with similar titles. The beginning of the end, and one is like the end of the beginning.
Well, yeah, there's like an acoustic version of that too, which is really weird.
Okay, so it's probably the same ones in the Watchmen trailer because that wasn't acoustic. Anyway, continue.
And this is the closest I think I've come to tapping out.
So this is your movie. Showgirls.
in a long time. I cannot remember the last time. It may have been when we did Bowl, which was years ago.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think it was the last Bowl we did either, because I think that was Blood Rain 3, which we both kind of liked.
Oh, right. It was not that one. It was one of the, I think,
maybe Postal. Because, yeah, you hated it. I loved it.
Right. This is the closest in years I've come to just, I almost sent you messages of like, look, I couldn't do it. I really almost did. And it was really early in the movie. I was like, I don't know if I could do that. One of my notes says, like, how the fuck is there still half an hour left of this steaming pile? Because, yeah, you're an hour and a half into this, and it's, like, still not winding up.
I would have taken issue with you getting drunk during a movie that we're reviewing, but I had to let it pass on this one.
Of course. I don't know how you did it. But yeah, zero brains. And may God have mercy on your souls. And you know what? I'm not mad at any of the cast. But yeah, Schumacher and this writer.
And Warner Brothers, I think, I think it is Warner Brothers that holds most of the blame. Because they're the ones who brought in the toy companies.
You're still the director and you are still the writer. You can do a better job than this. Even if you have the toy companies, you know, breathing down your necks. I would still, upon meeting them, despite writing episodes of one of my favorite shows of all time, Fringe, I would still knee him in the groin if I was given the chance.
And what have we learned?
What have we learned? Did they get paid by the cold pun?
And I learned that one mistake is plenty. It's another Ren Snippy reference. There are quite a few of them in this week. All right, so until next time, when we'll be reviewing Pootie Tang. From what I remember, this one will be quite good. A nice change of pace.
I've seen this recently, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it holds up good.
This is a palate cleanser. There's Showgirls would be a palate cleanser next to this,
I don't know about that. Maybe Saving Christmas. And speaking of those few movies, we decided before the show today that in addition to the anime list that Scott O suggested last week, we're going to be starting the avoid list, the anti-recommendation list.
The run like hell if anyone suggests watching this movie list.
Any movie that gets less than a brain from both of us, which I think is still just Showgirls, Crossroads, Saving Christmas, and now this one.
We'll have to see.
And we'll see. All right, so until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we're going to review, and every movie we reviewed so far. I usually mention episode 300 now, but I will mention that after Pootie Tang is a former placeholder on the list, Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death. Still have hoping I can find a copy of that. Say again?
Have we figured out how we're getting a copy?
I was just saying, I hope we can get it. I think I can find one.
Okay.
I think I have one bookmarked. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendation list. I can't even say it with a straight face. And I'm just going to leave that there.
Recommend you need Joe Schumacher in the parade.
I'll actually say, and as I just mentioned, the anti-recommendations list. I think I'm going to call it Movies to Avoid. The Avoid List, which this is obviously going straight onto right at the top. You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
You can nipple fuck yourself.
I was thinking you could watch this movie, but no, I wouldn't even say that.
Oh, if you're alphanumerically challenged, I would not want you to watch this movie.
No. 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life. There you are.
No, sir. I didn't like it.
Okay, titles, I have Adam West on Ice. Neon and Glitter, the movie. Here's where they start getting good. The Caped Compunction. Compunction is shame felt after doing something bad. The Franchise Killing Joke.
That might be the winner.
Or Based on a Cartoon by John Kricfalusi.
What's the cartoon he does?
Ren and Snippy? Rubber Nipples?
Oh, wait.
I've got three Rubber Nipple references going through here.
I only have Ask the Movie, Nipple Nation, Abandon All Subtext, Ye Who Enter Here.
Too long, but I like it.
Or Mr. Leather Convention.